But, you know, Adam says, don't blame me, blame my bride.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
And then Jesus. Here we go. And then Jesus, the second Adam, says to the Father, no, don't blame my bride, blame me.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Making History. My name is Brian.
And I'm Katie.
And we're the Hesses. We're glad to be back.
Yeah. Always.
Always. So it's been 2 days since we recorded. So we've been recording, I think we've mentioned this, we've been recording like late Wednesday nights.
Mm-hmm.
And that just needed to stop.
Right. Yeah. It's not the most ideal timing when we're tired and our brains are like...
It's been a long day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. On like half power, especially for me, because that's like my cleaning day. And
right.
So I get home and, you know, do dinner, bedtime. And then at that point, I'm pretty depleted.
Right.
So it's not great for the conversation.
Yeah. So we've moved some things around in our schedule.
Yep.
Now we're back to doing Friday recordings while the girls are at co-op.
Yep. That was the plan all along.
That was always the plan. And we did a little bit
mm-hmm.
and then we got off that schedule.
Yeah. So it's good to be back to this.
Yeah. So we don't have a ton to catch up on.
No.
It's only been 2 days since we recorded the last episode.
Right.
But you've got some glasses.
I do have some glasses.
New.
Yep. Well, not new, but it's new that I'm wearing them and actually enjoy wearing them.
Yes.
I've had glasses since third grade.
Yeah.
I was thinking about timing because somebody, when I dropped the girls off, they're like, oh, cute glasses. Are those new? And I was like, they are. They're like, oh, like, did you just now have to get them? And I was like, no.
Yeah.
I remember there was a day, I remember when my mom realized that I needed glasses. You know, that moment that it's like everything, you know, you don't even know.
You've been living with your eyesight.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I had been seeing fuzzy for forever and she didn't know. But we were at when I think it was one of my brother's baseball games. And I was like looking across, you know, how they have all like the sponsor signs along the fence. And I was like, Mom, what does that one say? And she was like, you can't read that? I was like, no. And she's like, those letters are huge. How can you not read that? She's like, I guess we're going to the eye doctor. And so that's when it all began.
Yep.
And it's just been getting progressively worse.
Worse and worse. And now you're legally blind.
Mm-hmm. Yep. About as blind as you can get without actually being blind.
Yep. But the glasses look good.
Thanks. I like them.
And since being back at the gym for a couple days, I'm significantly bummed at how quickly you can lose so much progress.
Yeah.
Because we started working out like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been pretty consistent for 2 years. Nothing crazy.
Yeah.
2 or 3 days a week usually.
Yeah.
And I felt like I had made some good progress. And I was out of the gym for like a month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I was back to square one.
Ugh.
And I'm so sore. And I like really tried to take it easy too.
Yeah. Yeah, but your muscles were like, ooh, nope.
Yeah.
This is too much.
Yep.
It'll come back. It's probably one of those things that, you know, right at the beginning is when it's the hardest. And then hopefully it'll kind of snap back and your body has muscle memory.
Yeah.
To get back to where you
counting on that
were mostly.
And it probably didn't help that I had just gone like a week and a half, 2 weeks with almost no appetite.
Yeah. That is
and
true.
And I've like not been eating.
Right. So you have
since
like
we were sick.
Very minimal fuel.
Yeah.
For your body. Yeah.
Right.
And so everything is just like, what's happening? I'm so tired.
Yeah. I was so annoyed at how much I couldn't do.
Yeah.
Compared to what I'm used to. It was very frustrating.
That is not a fun feeling. But when I get back into it, I'm sure I will have similar feelings, unfortunately. I keep saying that I want to do that like push-up challenge because push-ups have always been one of those things that I struggle with forever, for my whole life.
What's the push-up challenge?
Where you just like do a certain amount of push-ups every day and build up your strength. Mm. It's just building endurance and strength with push-ups, essentially, but in like a specific amount of time. And I think probably right now I could do like 5.
Yeah.
And I'd love to be able to do, I don't know, 20 even, which is not even like you are somebody. It's very irritating to me that like you could not even be in the gym or be working out and you could do like 50 push-ups. No problem. That's ridiculous.
I think it's different though.
I mean, it's great. It's good for you. I'm so happy for you.
I think it's different being a guy though.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But it still is annoying. But I'm thrilled for you.
Thanks. Okay. I apologize to everybody for all the coughing still.
Yeah. Even I'm feeling a little bit like right now. So I'm probably going to be joining you in your coughing a bit. Yeah,
it's very irritating.
Yes. One of these days it'll go away.
Yeah, it'll go away. We'll beat it.
Yep.
So as promised, we want to talk about victim mentality today. Mm-hmm. Last episode, we talked about responsibility and how responsibility is having the ability to respond.
Yep.
And when you don't have that and you're an irresponsible person, that is the pathway towards developing what we're talking about today, which is a victim mentality.
Victim mentality.
So before we get into what we're going to talk about, let's quickly define what we're not talking about.
Sure.
I want to say this at the front end.
Right.
Because I think this is really important. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to be clear that what we're not talking about today is people who are actual victims of other people's actions.
Right.
Of abuse. Mm-hmm. That is legitimate. And we're not trying to like disregard or downplay the experiences, like the horrible, hard, painful experiences that people have actually had.
Right.
Especially when they come at the hands of somebody else. Mm-hmm. So that's not what we're talking about today. What we are talking about is the belief that can very easily be developed that we are totally powerless in life and that we have no power or even opportunity to change the things about our lives that we don't like or that we wish were different. Mm-hmm. That we are powerless to do anything that would improve the quality of our life or the quality of our relationships.
Right. And that we're just subject to whatever's going on around us.
Yes.
Whatever, like, if somebody says something mean to us, just, you know, a very minor thing, then our whole day is ruined or, you know, and it's not our fault. It's because they did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And we'll get into this, but like when you have a victim mentality, you believe that everybody else is responsible for managing your emotions and your behavior.
Right.
If you do something I don't like and I get really angry and I have a big reaction, I'm going to find a way to justify thinking that it was your fault.
Right. Yep.
And again, that's not to say that you didn't do something mean or offensive.
Yeah.
But if you get to dictate my actions and my behavior, and if you get to choose what emotions I feel and how I act on those emotions, then I'm not in control of myself. You're in control of me.
Right. Which can make for just really chaotic life.
Yeah.
All around, because you never know what's going to, you know, come throughout your day. We have very positive outlooks, you know, at this point in our lives of, you know, expecting good things to happen, but it's, you know, life still happens. Sickness happens. Mean people who have had bad days happen. And so when you allow all of those circumstances to determine like how you act, then that just feels very, I mean, it's out of control. Really, essentially. And that's what we're talking about, is regaining that mindset that you are in control, or I am in control of me.
Yep.
You are in control of you.
Yep.
No matter what you throw at me or whatever anybody else throws at me, that I am still in control of my response, of my emotions, all the things in my hula hoop.
Exactly. Yeah. one of the things that separates responsible people from irresponsible people and victims is that, and throughout this episode, when we talk about victims, we're referencing what we mentioned at the beginning of this episode, that mm-hmm. we're not talking about like actual victims.
Yes.
We're talking about people who play the victim
right.
unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that separates them is somebody with a victim mentality will, like I said before, they'll believe that it's other people's job to manage their emotions
mm-hmm.
and to make them behave well.
Yeah. Make me happy. Make me feel
yes.
loved and seen. And
yes.
Yeah.
I don't know how to choose joy and kindness on my own. So mm-hmm. I need you to act a certain way
yeah.
that will allow for me to be joyful and kind.
Mm-hmm.
But when you step out of what I need from you, then I feel powerless to choose those things.
Yeah.
And I'm going to become a mirror and a reflection of my immediate surroundings.
Exactly.
And then when I encounter unkind people, my natural tendency will be to choose unkind reactions.
Yeah, just to follow suit.
Yeah.
Just jump right in the negative pool.
Yep.
Yeah.
But responsible people, they know that not only is it not your job to make me kind, but that the other people around me don't actually have the power to make me unkind.
Right.
That kindness is a choice. Mm-hmm. That's an inside job. Like
right.
joy, like gratitude, like all the things that are necessary in overcoming a victim mentality.
Mm-hmm.
It's an inside job.
Right.
It's not your job to make me that way.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have the power to not make me that way.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of a difference of like viewing your life as like you being in the driver's seat
mm-hmm.
versus you being in like the passenger seat.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're in the passenger seat of a car, you really have zero control of where you go, how fast you're going, how much you're swerving, mm-hmm. things like that. But when you're in the driver's seat, you have complete control of that.
Yeah.
So when you are a powerful person and you're not living in that victim mentality, you get to determine, no matter what obstacle comes up, how you are going to respond.
Yeah.
Rather than just being completely powerless to make any choice.
Mm-hmm. So I'd love to talk about this too, biblically, and to work through this topic, looking at the life of Christ,
mm-hmm.
because he gave some brilliant examples
yes.
of what it looks like to live totally powerfully
mm-hmm.
and responsibly.
Right. And in the hardest of times.
In the hardest of times. And to absolutely refuse to be a victim
mm-hmm.
of his surroundings.
Right.
And absolutely refuse to be a victim of other people's actions and behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one story I'd love to look at. This is in John 5, verses 2 through 9. Says, now there is in Jerusalem by the Sheep Gate a pool in Aramaic called Bethesda, which has five roofed colonnades. In these lay a multitude of invalids, blind, lame, and paralyzed. One man who had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and knew that he had already been there a long time, he said to him, do you want to be healed? And I'm going to stop there. That is so funny to me.
I know.
It's like, because
the most ironic question.
Yeah. Because it's like, Jesus, like you're at the pool of Bethesda.
Right.
Where periodically an angel comes down and stirs the water and whoever
yeah.
gets in the water gets healed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Jesus knew where he was.
Yeah.
He knew who was there
mm-hmm.
and he knew why they were there.
Right.
So when you see him ask a question like that, that seems very dumb and very obvious.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you need to dig a little bit deeper
right.
to ask, why was he asking such an obvious question?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, what are you actually getting at by asking
right.
that question?
It reminds me of in the garden when God was like, where are you?
Yeah.
He knows where they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He asks questions all throughout the Bible
mm-hmm.
and they're questions that he always knows the answer to.
Yeah.
The thing about questions that are so brilliant is that they require a response,
mm-hmm.
and a response requires thought.
Yes.
So when God asks a question to somebody that he knows the answer to, it's because he's trying to help reveal either heart posture or mindset,
yes.
something like that.
Yeah. And it's like what we talked about in our last episode. So if you're
yeah.
just now hopping in, we talk about
yes.
some brilliant questions in our previous episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
If this is your first episode, go back to the last episode and then go back to the beginning and listen to all of it. Okay, I'm going to keep reading.
Anyways.
So Jesus asked the question, do you want to be healed? The sick man answered him, "Sir, I have no one to put me in the pool when the water is stirred up, and while I'm going, another steps down before me." Jesus said to him, "Get up and take your bed and walk." And at once the man was healed, and he took up his bed and walked. And that day was the Sabbath. Hmm. By asking that question, like I'd mentioned, Jesus was trying to get to the mindset that this guy had.
Right.
There are a few like signs for when victim mentality is present. Mm-hmm. There's a few things to look for. And one of them is that when you have a victim mentality, you feel extremely limited in your options.
Yeah.
You don't know how to creatively problem solve. Again, because you don't believe that the problems you're experiencing are yours to solve.
Right.
You believe that they are caused by and owned by everybody else, which is partly why you feel so powerless.
Yeah.
Because it's like life is so hard and I'm facing all of these things and there's nothing I can do about it.
Right.
I need you to do something about it. And if you don't do it, then I'm stuck.
Right. You're constantly waiting for the knight in shining armor to come and solve all your problems for you.
Right.
And occasionally, you know, that can happen, that somebody comes and says, "Hey, I see this is going on. Let me help you." Mm-hmm. But a majority of the time, you're just going to be stuck waiting because it's your problem.
Well,
and nobody else's.
There are certain like relationship dynamics that start to emerge when you're dealing with this kind of mindset, in that people who have a victim mentality will look to form relationships with people that they've identified as the rescuer.
Yes.
And the rescuer will often look for people with a victim mentality because the person who's playing the victim, they like the sympathy and the attention that they get from the rescuer.
Yep.
And the rescuer likes feeling...
They like feeling like the hero.
Yeah. The rescuer likes the feeling that they get from knowing that they are solving problems for somebody, even though most of the time that looks like codependency.
Right.
One of the ways you can tell whether or not the problem you're solving is the product of codependency is, are you willing to work on somebody else's problem more than they're willing to work on it? And if the answer to that question is yes, then you have formed a codependent relationship with them.
Right. Yep.
If I have a friend that has a need, I'm willing to help them on that problem, but to the degree that they're also willing to work on it.
Exactly.
And that goes back to what we talked about last week with the questions that we ask our kids. Well, what do you want to do about that?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do about that?
Yep.
Because I can't live my life taking on every problem that everybody I know is facing.
It's exhausting.
No, it'll totally crush me.
Yeah.
And I won't have, I'll get super burned out really fast.
Yeah.
And then I'll start to play the blame game. Mm-hmm.
Then you become the victim.
Then I become the victim.
And you're having to solve everybody's problems because everybody's relying on you. So it turns the rescuer then turns into the victim.
Yeah.
Because they've enabled this victim mentality for so long that they are completely worn out, completely depleted of all that they have to give.
Yeah.
Because nobody's rescuing them.
Yeah.
And they're just riding on the feeling of being needed, because that's a, you know, that's a good feeling. I think especially as a mom, that is like, that's a very, it's a fine line that you walk as a parent, really, not just a mom, of feeling needed and enjoying feeling needed, because you get to help your kids solve problems, or you get to solve your kids' problems, really is what we're more talking about. And then eventually you get burnt out if you're just operating in that constantly. And then you have also in the process created a lot of entitled people around you feeling like, hey, I like, you need to do this for me.
Yeah.
I don't need to solve this. Like, that's your job.
Yeah.
And so they have zero responsibility.
Right.
In solving their own issues.
Yeah. The victim looks to the rescuer and thinks, well, it's your job to make me happy.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not doing that job.
Yeah.
And it's your fault that I'm not happy.
Right.
And then, you know, resentment is built up and it's just very dysfunctional.
Yep.
Anyways, there are a few other stories we'll look at, but I love this verse. This is 1 Corinthians 15:57. But thanks be to God, who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. And there are other verses like it that I could read. But as sons and daughters of God, we have the opportunity to leave a victim mentality behind mm-hmm. and develop a victorious mentality.
Yeah.
Because there is not an earthly problem to which there is not a heavenly solution.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good.
Every problem in the world has a solution.
Mm-hmm.
The victim mentality, like I said, will keep you trapped, feeling like you don't have options. But honestly, like, include the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
Pray about what's going on.
Right.
Get used to asking the question, what can I be doing differently mm-hmm. that will produce a different outcome?
Yeah.
Because I don't like the way this is going. I don't right. like the way this looks right now in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that question from last week, what do you want to do about that?
Yeah.
That's a question that if you have a problem and it's your problem to solve, ask yourself that question.
Yes. Right.
Okay. What can I do about that?
Mm-hmm.
What am I going to do about that?
Right. Because if you see, you know, I think anybody can look at their life and see something that is not living up to the standards of what the Lord's promised us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there would be any exception to that. So if you're willing to look introspectively and understand that, yes, there are areas of my life that don't live up to what the Lord has promised. And so what am I going to do about that? If you're willing to look at those issues, you also have to be willing, or you need to be willing, to actually address those and ask those questions rather than seeing the problem and then just mm-hmm. sit there and wallow in your sadness, because that's not going to get you anywhere.
Yeah.
And nobody, like we said, is going to come riding in on a white horse and say, oh, you thought about this problem. Let me show you all the ways that you can make it better.
Mm-hmm.
It's taking that initiative and saying, okay, what are some simple steps that I can take in order to align my life more with the kingdom of heaven?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here are a couple other stories that I love. So here's a time that Jesus was just not going to be a victim. Luke 4:29-30. And they rose up and they drove him out of the town and brought him to the brow of the hill on which their town was built so that they could throw him down the cliff. But passing through their midst, he went away. So here's Jesus with a mob of people trying to kill him
yep.
because they believe he's blasphemous
mm-hmm.
because he's claiming to be the Son of God.
Right.
And they don't like that. And so they decide, like, we have to enact Mosaic law
mm-hmm.
and you have to die.
Right.
And so Jesus was like, no.
And today.
And I would love to be there to know, like, what does it mean that he just slipped through the crowd?
Right. Because surely.
I don't even know, like, what that means.
Right.
Exactly.
Because they must have, like, had hands on him if they were leading him up to the cliff.
Yeah.
And so, like, what happened between them having him on the cliff?
Right.
And him.
Yeah.
Walking right through the crowd. Like, what
yeah.
does that look like? The Chosen, if you've watched The Chosen.
Yeah.
That was a pretty cool.
They had an interesting take on
take.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. It felt very, I don't know, dare I say, like, magical, because the right. whole, like, yeah. world, it was like time stopped.
Right.
And everybody froze.
Yeah.
And then he just walked right through everybody.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, okay.
Yeah.
What? Like that. But then after I thought about it, I was like, well, no.
But I don't have
right.
I don't have another.
How else would it happen?
Way that,
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know how it happened. I just know that he had a problem and he knew that it wasn't yet his time to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, he, led by the Spirit, had a solution
yep.
and found a way to escape.
Yep.
And so that story was in Luke. And if you hop back to Matthew and you read on through the gospel and you get to a later point in his life, this is Matthew 26, verses 46 through 50. He says, "Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand." While he was still speaking, Judas came, one of the 12, and with him a great crowd with swords and clubs, from the chief priests and the elders of the people. And this is a very similar setting
mm-hmm.
in that there's a mob of people coming to lay hands on him,
right.
wanting to, they're not trying to kill him in that moment, but mm-hmm. but capture him. We know historically that Jesus had a way of escaping those types of situations.
Right.
But here he is welcoming what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It says, "Now the betrayer had given them a sign, saying, 'The one I kiss is the man, seize him.' And he came up to Jesus at once and said, "Greetings, Rabbi," and he kissed him. Jesus said to him, "Friend, do what you came to do." Then they came up and laid hands on Jesus and seized him. From this point all the way to the crucifixion, mm-hmm. Jesus refuses to be the victim.
Yeah.
And he is victorious in everything.
Mm-hmm.
He is victorious over his actions. He is victorious over his emotions.
Yeah.
Judas, who had been one of the 12, came leading this mob of people to arrest mm-hmm. Jesus. And Jesus refuses to lower his standards of behavior.
Yeah.
And he greets Judas by calling him friend. Saying, "Friend, do what you came to do."
Yeah.
No matter what the people around Jesus were doing, no matter how they were treating him, he refused to allow them to determine mm-hmm. his actions,
right.
his behavior,
yeah.
and what he was feeling.
Right. He refused to choose anything other than love.
Yeah.
Even in that moment when he knew exactly what was happening.
Yeah.
And one of his closest friends is yep. betraying him.
Right.
And still, he calls him friend.
Mm-hmm.
He's not like, "Hey, jerk, go ahead, do whatever you got to do." You know, it's like, okay, friend.
Mm-hmm. And then jumping back to Luke, while Jesus was enduring the worst of the worst, he'd mm-hmm. been betrayed, he'd been beaten mm-hmm. and tortured and whipped, and he had been made to carry his cross up to where he was going to be crucified. Jesus says, this is Luke 23:34. He said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." And again, Jesus was so powerful. And what I mean by powerful is that he was so responsible
mm-hmm.
for himself.
Yeah.
He was so responsible for how he felt and what he did and how he chose to think about people and how he chose to speak to people.
Mm-hmm.
That he was so powerful that no matter what you did, you couldn't make him not love you.
Right.
You couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
The meanest, worst, most brutal, horrific things
yeah.
that were done to him, no matter what they did,
mm-hmm.
they could not make him stop loving them.
Right.
And that is the mark of a powerful person. Mm-hmm. That's the mark of a responsible person.
Yeah.
That's the mark of a victorious person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You couldn't make him not love you.
Right.
And as we move in life towards a more victorious mindset, and as we become people who take full responsibility for how we feel, for how we act, for how we think, for how we choose to go through life and how we choose to respond to people, even people who are doing hurtful things, the more we move out of a victim mentality mm-hmm. into a victorious mentality, we will become people that are able to go through life saying, "You cannot make me stop loving you."
Yeah.
And that's ultimately the goal
right.
of discipleship to Jesus, is it right. would produce the ability to go through life saying, "You can't make me not love you."
Mm-hmm.
You can't do it.
Right. Can you imagine your immediate response while you're in the most pain that you've ever been in your entire life?
Mm-hmm.
All these people are like cheering that you're dying. Mm-hmm. And like happy about what happened to you.
Yep.
And your first response is, "Father, forgive them."
Yeah.
That is literally mind blowing.
Yeah.
Like I can't imagine, you know, being there
right.
in my life and having that be my first response. That is a, you know, major goal. And it just makes you realize just how deep his love is
yeah.
for us, that like you said, nothing can make him stop.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing can make him choose anything differently, that he in his mind was set on, "I love my people."
Yeah.
Regardless of what they say or do.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just wild.
Yeah. And there's this verse in Hebrews 12 that I love. This is Hebrews 12:2-3. "Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." So it was for the joy that was set before him that he endured the cross.
Mm-hmm.
Going to the cross wasn't something that happened to him. He wasn't a victim
yeah.
of the Pharisees and of the chiefs and mm-hmm. the priests. He wasn't a victim to any of them.
Right.
he knew what he was doing the whole time. Mm-hmm. And he was victorious in every step of the way.
Yeah. His goal was always the same. He set the goal to love all of his people, mm-hmm. to save his people by sacrificing himself. And nothing got in the way of that.
Yeah.
That every choice he made, mm-hmm. pushed him towards his goal. Everything he said, every place he went was all super intentional. And I mean, can you look at anybody else's life and, you know, see any more obstacles in the way of like getting to right. your goal? Like,
yeah,
everybody was against, or not everybody, but you know, so many people were against him.
Yeah. By the end, there was almost nobody left.
Right. And there were so many attempts to yeah. kill him, so many attempts to put him in prison, to capture him, to, you
stone
know,
him.
To stone yeah. him, to do anything to keep him from getting to his goal. Yet he was unwavered mm-hmm. the entire time.
Right.
And fully man.
Yeah.
At this point too, right. you know, like you can't argue like, well, he, you know, he's divine. You know, of course he is. And he mm-hmm. was still, but he chose to be fully man. And so he was modeling, this is possible
yeah.
for you to live completely free of the victim mindset and choose love no matter what the circumstances are.
Yeah. Let's talk about the four signs of victim mentality.
Okay.
And there are others, I'm sure, but we have four to talk about. Four signs of victim mentality, and then we'll talk about four perceived privileges or benefits mm-hmm. of it. Mm-hmm. So the first sign of victim mentality is that you feel like you have no choice. You feel like you have to do things.
Mm-hmm.
For those who are listening and not watching, I'm using air quotes.
Yep.
You feel like you have to do things, or that people make you do things or mm-hmm. make you feel a certain way.
Yep.
And every time we've taught this in the past, I've asked people, say, okay, can you give me an example of something that you have to do?
Mm-hmm.
And hands start going up, and
yeah.
people say, well, you have to, you know, you have to love your kids, or you have to, you know, you have to feed your family, mm-hmm. you have to work, you
right.
have to, you know, you do all yep. these things. And every time I'll let people, you know, go through the list and exhaust yeah. all the things that they believe that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, but the one thing that each and every one of those things have in common is that you don't have to do any of them.
Yep.
If you do them, it's because you chose to do them.
Mm-hmm.
To say that you have to do it would be to say that not doing it is not an option.
Right.
And that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a job, you don't have to go to work.
Right.
You'll probably get fired if you don't go.
Sure.
But
there are going to be consequences.
There are going to be consequences.
If you don't choose it. Yeah.
Yes. But if you get up and you get in your car and you drive to work
mm-hmm.
and you work, it's because you chose to do that.
Yeah. You're not a robot that somebody yeah. forced and programmed to get in the car and drive.
Yeah.
You willingly did it.
Yeah. And the reason I know that you don't have to go to work is that sometimes people don't go to work.
Right.
We have friends who are business owners and they have had employees who just don't show up.
I'm not going to do it.
And they've chosen to not work.
Yep.
And because of that, I know that it is possible to not go to work
mm-hmm.
when you're meant to.
Yep.
But you feel very limited in life.
Mm-hmm.
You feel very powerless. You feel yeah. like everybody is controlling you when your time, your schedule, your energy, your money is mm-hmm. all bound up in things that you believe that you have to do
right.
or that somebody is making you do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you step away from that and you realize that I'm doing the things that I'm doing because I'm choosing to do them, nobody is making me feel the way I'm feeling, nobody is making me act the way I'm acting,
mm-hmm.
you start to regain power
yeah.
and control.
Right.
And you start to see a pathway forward in which you are able to make changes within yourself that will
right.
produce a different outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that means being in the same environment, but just choosing to have a different attitude towards mm-hmm. what you're doing.
Right. And I think living with a victim mentality can seem, which we're, I might be getting a little bit ahead, but just to mention, it can seem easier than living powerfully because
sure.
you're not responsible,
yep.
again, air quotes, for anything. So you can't be to blame for anything.
Yeah.
But in reality, you're creating a much harder environment for yourself by choosing to live as a victim, mm-hmm. because you are relinquishing control to everything around you and everybody around you. And mm-hmm. so you have really zero hope for making anything happen in your life, because yep. you have given over power in every area of your life. So you have no say.
Yeah.
But when you choose to live powerfully, really, it can be, you know, if you're, especially when you're coming right out of a victim mentality, it can be harder. But like we've talked about in previous episodes, it is a different kind of hard. Mm-hmm. And I would argue a million times over, a better kind yep. of hard, because you are, like you said, regaining power and coming into a mindset that, like, I can make changes mm-hmm. in my own life. No matter what's going on around me, I can still choose A, B, and C to live out and to continue living out regardless of what's going on around me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Here's number two. The second sign of victim mentality is that you are full of excuses. Mm-hmm. You're constantly focused on what you can't do.
Yep.
And this comes back to what I was saying, that people with a victim mentality typically see, they'll look at a problem and they'll see option A or B, mm-hmm. and they'll never look for option C or yeah. D or E or F. And they feel extremely limited and powerless. One of the stories I love in scripture, again, is the feeding of the 5,000, mm-hmm. because the disciples looked out and they saw a problem,
yeah.
that there's, you know, between 10, 15,000 people there, mm-hmm. and they're hungry. They've been there all day.
Right.
And there's no food. And so they see two options. Well, really, they see the one option that they present to Jesus, like, hey, let us go into town mm-hmm. and buy some food.
Right.
Or let us send them to town to get mm-hmm. their own food. But they didn't see, like, any creative options beyond right. that.
Yep.
And part of what Jesus was trying to teach them, because this wasn't the first time, or this was the first time, but it wasn't the only time that this happened.
Yeah.
Where they had a crowd of people that were hungry with mm-hmm. no food to feed them. And so Jesus doesn't think that those are the best options. Mm-hmm. And so he goes for option C and he says, well, you feed them.
Yep.
And they're like, well, we have nothing to feed them with.
Yeah.
And so he says, well, gather what you have, you know. And if you know the story, he multiplies the food, mm-hmm. 5 loaves and 2 fish.
Yeah.
And he feeds, you know, tens of thousands of people.
Right. And has leftovers.
With just that. And has leftovers. And so, again, Jesus was refusing to be, to play the victim. He wasn't going to whine. He wasn't going to complain about the situation, because he understood that every earthly problem has a heavenly solution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, verses like John 12, 49 and 50, and John 5, 19, they both talk about how Jesus was constantly listening to the mm-hmm. Father and looking to the Father.
Yeah.
And everything that he did and everything he said was a product of what he saw the Father doing, he saw the Father saying.
Right.
And so he lived his life fully in tune with the Father. Mm-hmm. And that was how he knew what to do.
Yeah.
That was how he knew that he was going to feed those people. He was never worried. He was never afraid.
Right. Never doubting, scared. Like, oh no. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have to remember too that, like, he is such a creative God.
Yeah.
And his solutions a lot of times are going to be, like, just crazy to the world.
Sure.
Because the world cannot think in the way mm-hmm. that he does. And so remembering that he is a creative God, we have to remember also that we are made in his image. And yeah. so we are creative people, mm-hmm. especially when we're partnered with him.
Yeah.
And so when we're presented with these problems and we look to the world, they are going to have, you know, here's this way or this way. You can either do it this way or this way. But when we look to him, mm-hmm. then a whole new realm of possibilities can open.
Right.
And we can say, oh, okay. This is another solution that the world wouldn't have seen it this way, because they have a completely different mindset yeah. and they only see things very black and white, but the Lord can create beautiful things out of nothing. Mm-hmm. And so who are we to limit his problem-solving abilities.
Yeah, he's so creative. Mm-hmm. I love that. Okay, here's the third sign of victim mentality is chronic complaining, often partnered with blaming. Mm. If you are problem-focused, you're probably going to complain about your situation, mm-hmm. spend more time complaining about it than you are actually finding solutions.
Yeah.
And again, complaining is often partnered with blaming. Mm-hmm. And the first, I think the first case of victim mentality that we see ever in the history of the world was an Adam in the Garden of Eden. Mm-hmm. Because after he and Eve had eaten the fruit and they were hiding, like you said, they were hiding in the garden. And the Lord is walking through the garden and he's like, "Where are you guys?" And they said, "Well, we were scared because we ate the fruit, and so we were afraid, and so we were hiding from you." Mm-hmm. And then the Lord said, "Well, did you eat from the tree I asked you not to, that I commanded you not to eat from?" And Adam says, "Well, the woman," so he blames Eve.
Yep.
He says, "The woman that you gave me." Mm-hmm. So he blames Eve, and he blames God.
Yep.
And this is just classic victim mentality.
Yeah.
Like, I'm faultless.
Right.
I am not to be blamed. Mm-hmm. It was the woman's fault.
Right.
And it was your fault that you gave me her in the first place. Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, there's a lot of really amazing parallelism between Adam in the garden and Jesus.
Mm. Yes.
Adam is referred to as the first Adam and Jesus is referred to as the second Adam in scripture. But, you know, Adam says, "Don't blame me, blame my bride." Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
And then Jesus, here we go. And then Jesus, the second Adam, says to the Father, "No, don't blame my bride, blame me."
Yeah. He redeemed everything from the very beginning.
Yeah. And he restored us back to the original design, which was to live in perfect union and relationship with the Father. And there's a ton, so many things like that, where there's this like amazing parallelism between Adam and Jesus.
Yeah.
And with Jesus, it's always like the flip side.
Right. Yeah. It's not him modeling, you know, or showing us Adam all over again. It's him saying, "Okay, this has happened. Yeah. This is what got us to where we are, but this is what I'm doing about it."
Yeah.
Again, that powerful.
Yeah.
The powerfulness that he carried.
Right.
That he said, "Okay, I see this problem and I'm taking it and I'm making it my own."
Yeah.
And I'm redeeming literally all things.
Yeah. And you see that, I'll just throw out one more. One of the products of the fall was that thorns would grow.
Yeah.
So the fall brought thorns. And then Jesus went to the cross. And so they ate from the tree, the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and it produced thorns. Mm-hmm. And so Jesus took the thorns and he wore them on his head as a crown.
Yeah.
And hung them back up on a tree.
Right.
There's just so many cool things like that. Ooh,
the Bible is full of so many just beautiful illustrations.
Yeah.
And things that just show you how intentional the Lord is.
Right.
It's wild.
Yeah. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay. We need to get through these because this is going to be a very long episode.
It is.
The fourth sign is hopelessness. Mm. Feeling very stuck in life. Feeling like you have absolutely no expectation for anything to change or for anything to improve. And that hopelessness tends to lead to inaction. Mm-hmm. This is just how it is.
Right.
This is just how my life is. This is just how my marriage is. This is just how my kids are.
Yep.
There's nothing I can do about it.
Right. You become very accepting of suboptimal circumstances.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just live in it and accept it for what it is. And it's like, well, nothing I can do about it.
Yep. Mm. And we'll talk about real quick some of the perceived privileges or perceived benefits of victim mentality, because there is a draw to it.
Yeah.
There's a draw.
Yep.
There's a reason that it seems very enticing. Mm-hmm. The first is that you get attention and sympathy from people.
Right.
And this goes back to what I was talking about before with the victim-rescuer relationship.
Yeah.
That victims love the attention and sympathy that they get. especially when they can find themselves a nice rescuer mm-hmm. who will play the part and will feed that
right
desire.
Somebody that they can suck all the life out of.
Exactly. The second is you get to hand all of your responsibility and choices to other people.
Mm-hmm.
You get to live your life feeling like you're just not responsible for
yeah.
yourself, for your life, for anything that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, I think, like a perceived freedom.
Sure.
That comes with that.
Yeah.
And again, that gives opportunity for you to blame everybody else mm-hmm. when things don't go the way you want them to go.
Right, because it's not your problem.
Well, it wasn't my responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. It's your job to make me happy. It's your mm-hmm. job to make me kind.
Yeah.
And when I'm angry, it's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're not responsible. You get to hand all of that off.
Yep.
And then blame everybody else
mm-hmm.
when things don't go the way you want it to go.
Right. If you like to live with a roller coaster of emotions,
yeah,
then this victim mentality is for you.
Yep.
That's what you're going to experience, because yep. when people are acting accordingly, then you'll be fine. When they're not, then you are not fine.
Yep.
Yeah.
Number three is you get to feel justified in holding on to your bitterness and your anger and your resentment.
Hmm.
You feel totally justified.
Yeah.
It's your fault anyways.
Right.
So. Yep.
So you were the one who actually created this bitterness in my heart. So.
Yeah.
I don't need to do anything about it. Right. You're the one who needs to change.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wouldn't have to feel this way.
Yeah.
If you didn't do whatever it is that you did.
Right.
And again, coming back to Jesus as our model and as our example, you couldn't get him to hate you.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't make him stop loving you.
Yeah.
He didn't harbor resentment.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't harbor bitterness.
Right.
He chose to forgive. And again, through him, as sons and daughters, we have the opportunity to live a similar life.
Yes.
That we have the power to forgive. We mm-hmm. have the power to release.
Yeah.
And to choose to just not live a life built upon resentment and
yep.
bitterness and anger.
Because life is going to present many opportunities for us to do just that, to harbor those things, even down to like a silly thing of somebody like cutting you off on the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how often is that used as like an illustration
oh, yeah.
of like, well, this person was driving down the road and all of a sudden they pulled right in front of me and
yep.
was yelling at them and shaking my fist. And even like little things like that, just like those are good opportunities to start practicing getting out of the victim mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of instantly getting angry at whoever, you know, cut you off, just chill out,
yeah.
you know, and just say, right. okay, I'm not going to be fazed. I'm not going to be shaken.
Yeah.
And because those are even times that like, I remind myself like, oh, why am I getting mad at mm-hmm. somebody? Like, what if like, this happened to them today. And so like, or they weren't paying yeah. attention. They're in a hurry to get somewhere because, you know, somebody need, you know, whatever right. it is,
yeah.
just allow yourself to not instantly play the victim and say, well, you did that and that's your yeah. fault. And so now I'm mad.
Yeah. If you love to rehearse your past injustices to people,
that's a good one.
Then you may have some victim mentality.
Right.
Like if it's routine for you to get together with your friends, and the conversation tends to revolve around all of the ways that people have done things
mm-hmm.
that you don't like, or
yeah.
they've done hurtful things.
And right.
you're harboring resentment
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to find people to help you feel justified in harboring
right.
that resentment. Then
yep.
that's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
And, you know, we've all been there. So
for sure,
again, all of these things don't allow shame to come in
yeah.
and start dictating your choices and your feelings and your decisions here, because like that one, especially, I feel like even like it's pretty prevalent with girls, gossip, you know,
sure.
well, did you hear what, you know, what happened mm-hmm. here, what this person said or what this person
yeah.
did? And I am as guilty as anybody of walking in that. And 'cause it can feel what I'm trying to think of the word, it can feel edifying when somebody else feels the same way that you do.
Yes.
In a certain situation.
Yeah.
But then like, look at that. Is it actually going to be helpful mm-hmm. for you guys to start like, oh, well, yeah, well, they did that to me and they said this to me and I feel the same way. Like, you might feel encouraged for a second that you're not alone in that.
Right.
But if you continue just allowing that to build up, mm-hmm. that bitterness is going to start creeping out from the inside. And it's going to start affecting how you treat people, how you love people, mm-hmm. how you act around people.
Yep. How you think about them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Misery loves company.
It does.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the last perceived privilege of having a victim mentality is that you get to never be wrong.
Yeah.
And that's probably the biggest perk.
Yeah.
Is you get to go through life with this state of, I would say, perpetual delusion.
Yeah.
That no matter what, you're always right in how you think. Mm-hmm. You're always right in what you've done.
Yeah.
You are always right in how you have reacted
mm-hmm.
because it was somebody else's fault.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yep.
Well, that felt like a lot.
There's our cheery episode of the week.
Woo.
Yay.
So
are you
fun.
A victim?
It's hard though, because like I find it necessary to talk about these things, because if I am somebody who is trapped in a victim mentality,
mm-hmm.
one, I may not know that.
Yes. Yeah.
Two, I may not know that I actually have a victim mentality, and if I don't, I probably don't know what the alternative is
right.
to that.
Yeah. So, and even if you do know that you're in the victim mentality,
mm-hmm.
especially if you've been living in that forever
mm-hmm.
and you've never known another way,
yeah.
then you're not going to be trying to get yourself out of it.
Right.
Until it's brought to your attention
mm-hmm.
and you say, oh, maybe there is a different way.
Right.
It's one of those things you don't know until you know. And then you can do something about it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just our way of shining a light on something that we've just seen as very prevalent in the world today, mm-hmm. especially in America.
Very much so. We were just talking about that the other day.
Yeah.
There are so many people
mm-hmm.
that just instantly are like, oh.
Yeah.
I can't do anything to change anything around me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just it's such an unfortunate way to live life.
Yeah.
And that's why we want to talk about these things mm-hmm. is to show people, hey, I think there's a better way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know this has been a longer episode.
Yeah.
But I just had one more thought that I had forgotten about.
Mm.
And we'll throw this on as a bonus fifth sign
that
you may have. Victim mentality. People with victim mentality tend to hop around quickly from job to job to job, or from church to church to church, or from relationship to relationship to relationship.
Yep.
And it's always the same story. It was the boss's fault.
Mm-hmm.
It was always the pastor's fault. It was always the boyfriend or the girlfriend's fault. And eventually if you are going through life like that, eventually, if you want to break that cycle, it's going to require you to come to the realization that everywhere you go, there you are again.
Yep.
And you are part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And
what's the common denominator?
What is the common denominator?
In all of these situations.
You've had 5 jobs over the last 2 years. You've been to 3 different churches.
Mm-hmm.
You've had 5 different girlfriends or boyfriends.
Yeah.
And it's always somebody else's fault.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's time to give consideration to the possibility that you've contributed to the dysfunction.
Yeah.
And if you can see this problem as something that you have ownership of
mm-hmm.
and that you have an opportunity to solve that problem, then you can start asking the question, okay, this is a pattern in my life.
Mm-hmm.
What am I going to do about that?
Yep.
What can I do about that?
Yes.
How can I start to change my attitude about work? How can I change my attitude about my church or mm-hmm. my pastor, or my boss, or my girlfriend?
Yeah. What are some creative solutions that I can find that might not be obviously presented to me,
mm-hmm.
but that can work for me in order to change my circumstances.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's end it there.
There it is.
All right. I think next week, as we were talking about responsibility last week and victim mentality today, I think it'd be fun to do an episode next week on self-control. Because there's a lot about self-control. We've maybe mentioned it in like early episodes.
Yeah.
But I'd love to have a whole episode dedicated to that because there's some really fun stuff to talk about with that.
There's a lot that you can unpack with self-control.
Okay. If you're watching this on YouTube, if you would, please do us a favor and like this video and subscribe. That's a very small thing that helps in a very big way. And if you are listening to this on any podcast platform, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you might listen, please do us a favor if you have found any value in our content and leave us a good review. Again, that is a very small thing that helps in a very big way.
Yep.
Okay. Awesome. That's going to be it. Once again, my name is Brian.
And I'm Katie.
And we're making history. We'll see you next time.